Funding for Think comes from SMU Doctor and Master of Liberal Studies programs.
Citing a lack of progress, the United Nations yesterday suspended the first international peace talks on Syria since 2014. Meanwhile, many of the 4.5 million Syrians who have fled their country since the outbreak of war feel they have no choice but to stay. As Ghada Mukhtad, a Syrian who has settled in North Texas, explained to KERA's Rick Holter last week.
I came here as a visitor, and I never thought that I will stay that long here in the United States. Many things changed inside Syria. We thought that things will be solved, Assad will be stepped down, and the war will be ended. But we found that after a lot of threat of kidnapping my kids, I cannot go back.
This is a special edition of Think on KERA. I'm Chris Boyd, here with a live studio audience. Just a tiny fraction of Syrian refugees have been accepted for resettlement in the United States, fewer than 3,000 as of late last month, as U.S. officials work to verify their identities and ensure that none of those who are allowed in have intentions to harm Americans. Today's show is a co-production of KERA and the World Affairs Council of Dallas-Fort Worth. And joining us to talk about balancing national security with our humanitarian values are three guests. Ryan Crocker is former U.S. ambassador to Afghanistan, Iraq, Pakistan, Syria, Kuwait, and Lebanon, and now serves as dean of the George Bush School of Government and Public Service at Texas A&M. Don Huffines is a member of the Texas State Senate, representing District 16, which stretches across North Texas from DFW Airport to Rowlett. And Jennifer Syme is senior vice president of United States Programs for the International Rescue Committee. Welcome, all of you, to Think.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chris.
Jennifer Syme, to the extent that it's possible to generalize about such a large group of people, of refugees, what do the individuals who have left Syria since the start of the war have in common?
Mm-hmm. So, first of all, the refugee experience really is common across all refugees, regardless of whether they're coming from Syria or they're coming from Congo or they're coming from Burma. So these are all people that have fled from persecution, from being killed, from seeing their family members shot in the street. And generally, they flee their country of origin. In the case of Syria, they often go to Jordan, to Lebanon, to Turkey, Iraq, Egypt. And they stay there for a certain period of time. They register with the United Nations. And then, you know, there's a process to determine whether they are interested in being resettled in other countries. And this is where the United States comes into the picture.
Between 2007 and 2013, close to 85,000 Iraqi refugees were resettled in the United States without a whole lot of public outcry. How have they fared?
Well, they have fared very well. You know, refugees, again, what is important to understand is that, you know, the first few years, of course, are difficult. The process of resettlement is not easy. People are coming from very different environments, and they need to adapt to a new culture. They need to learn English. They need to find employment. But over time, we see that refugees in general, and Iraqis are not an exception, begin to do extremely well. They're less dependent on any public benefits. Their incomes rise. They begin to buy homes, you know, and Iraqis have not been an exception to that rule.
Senator Huffines, is the relative success in resettling displaced Iraqis an indication that the United States can take in people from very troubled places without undue risk to the homeland?
Well, I do believe that the resettling of the Syrian refugees is a security risk. Contrary to maybe what the President of the United States thinks, we are at war with radical Islam. And I don't think it's, and even the federal government, I don't trust the federal government to properly vet the refugees that are being resettled. You know, if you could, I could even quote here James Clapper saying, he's the National Intelligence Director for the Obama administration. And his quote is, "I don't obviously put it past the likes of ISIL to infiltrate operatives among these refugees. So that's a huge concern of ours." And it's a concern for, should be a concern for Dallas, and it's a concern for the state of Texas.
Ambassador Crocker, you have lived in Syria and in other places that we are receiving refugees from. These people have been your neighbors. To what extent are they people we could or could not relate to, the people sitting in this room, the people listening to this conversation?
I spent 3 years in Syria as ambassador, traveled extensively in the country. It is always a mistake to generalize about an entire nationality, but I'm going to go ahead and generalize about an entire nationality. Syrians and Iraqis share some common traits. Before conflict swept through the two countries, they were, broadly speaking, middle-class societies. And societies that prized education. So I think what you'll see in both Syrian and Iraqi refugee populations, they reflect their society as a whole, given to hard work, prizing education for their children. Also, neither Iraqis nor Syrians expatriate easily or readily. And I think you kind of heard that with the refugee at the beginning of the program. They're attached to their countries. They hang on if they possibly can. And the fact that millions have fled the country is a pretty stark statement of how bad conditions actually are.
What is the effect on the international reputation of the United States if we accept or refuse to accept refugees sort of commensurate to the size of our population, to the wealth of the United States?
That comes in different levels of concern. I think in Europe what we're seeing now, given the absence of U.S. leadership, is the pressures on individual European countries are becoming immense, and the entire political structure of the European Union is now, frankly, at risk. I have called for some time for U.S. leadership on a truly global crisis, which is the refugee crisis. This isn't just about the numbers we accept. It's about the U.S. using its great weight in the world to fashion a global solution to a global problem. So we're watching our European friends, and Germany in particular. Not since German reunification have we had a chancellor who has been as close to the U.S. as Angela Merkel is. She's in trouble because of the refugee issue. Moving to the region, it's interesting to watch Islamic State social media. They're watching the debate in this country fairly closely, and they tweet and retweet. If I've got the term of art right, I don't do it myself. Any anti-refugee statement, or any anti-Muslim statement, or any anti-Arab statement that comes out of this country, and they use it to say to particularly Arab Sunnis, it's what we've always told you. The Crusaders hate Arabs. They hate you. We are your only defense. We are your only refuge. Come to us. So it's kind of making Islamic State's case for them, which clearly is something we shouldn't be doing.
Senator Huffines, when you look at the challenges in places like Germany, places like France, is this an indication to you that it's a bad idea to take a larger number of refugees?
Well, yes, I do. I think it's a bad idea for the European countries. I think it's not necessarily the refugees I'm talking about. It's radical Islam. It's taking refugees from countries we know that we're at war with, and probably we should just take a time out and get a moratorium going on the countries that we know that promote radical Islam. It's not against all refugees, and there are many, many great Muslims and great people that deserve help, but until we can really be crystal clear, 100% certainty that this isn't a security risk, then we should stop it.
Is 100% certainty possible, Jennifer Slime?
Well, first I'd like to say that, I mean, one of the reasons why we should be resettling Syrian refugees is that people are dying. They are putting their lives on hold. They are, you know, suffering terrible things right now. And we, as the greatest superpower in the world and as a member of the international community, have a duty to protect these people. I do believe that we have a very strong vetting system. The vetting for each refugee takes between 18 and 24 months. There are a number of steps and a multitude of government agencies that are involved, and the checks run all the way up until people get on the plane. So I do think that we have a very, very strong system, and I think that's been shown by the fact that we have resettled 784,000 refugees in this country since 9/11 and 3 million since 1975, and they've integrated very well into the fabric of American society.
Ambassador Crocker, there are Americans who worry that extending residency to a greater number of Syrian refugees in particular will create a sort of Trojan horse effect, right? People come in and they appear to be part of a family, of a group that has no intention to harm the United States, but they're in fact people who are dangerous. What do you say to people who have these concerns?
First, I understand the concerns and the fears. What happened on 9/11? I was just in New York a couple of days ago to speak at the 9/11 Museum. That changed this country forever. We look at Paris. We look at San Bernardino. So I understand the fears, but you need to unpack them and unpack the issues. As Jennifer says, if a terrorist is trying to infiltrate this country, highly unlikely he or she will choose a refugee route. It's too long and there's too much screening. There are lots of other ways to get in, including on an American passport in some cases. Look, we are a nation of immigrants and refugees. None of us sitting on this stage were here to greet the Mayflower when it landed as Native Americans. And none of us had forebears who came here in chains. So we're immigrants, we're the offspring of immigrants or refugees. That's what America is. And we resist each successive wave of immigrants. My forebears came from Ireland in the 19th century at a time when shop windows had signs in them saying, "No Irish need apply." Well, they made it in, they made their way, got themselves established, then I am sure joined countless other Irish Americans in opposing Italian immigration. We just kind of do this, and then we get over it, and we emerge stronger and stronger as a nation of immigrants and refugees. So the same thing is going to happen that happened with the Irish and the Italians and the Vietnamese. It's going to happen with Arab refugees and immigrants. They will find their way into our society. They will become Americans. They will become us. And they will enrich our society by bringing their own culture and civilization with them. So we'll always be what we always were. We're Americans, so we do it the hard way. But I'm confident that what has characterized this country throughout its entire independence as a republic will continue to characterize it as we deal with this group of refugees and immigrants.
We're speaking this hour about Syrian refugee resettlement in the United States with three guests. Ryan Crocker is Dean of the George Bush School of Government and former U.S. Ambassador to Syria and a number of other countries. Don Huffines is a Texas State Senator. And Jennifer Syme is Senior Vice President of United States Programs for the International Rescue Committee. If you'd like to be part of this conversation, we're not taking calls today, but you can call, email think@kera.org, or as always, find me on Twitter @ChrisBoydThink.
Funding for Think comes from the SMU Graduate Liberal Studies Program. You can apply now for the Doctor of Liberal Studies degree beginning in the fall of 2016. A customizable evening graduate program for working professionals. More at smu.edu/GLS.
You're listening to Think on KERA. I'm Chris Boyd. Today, in partnership with the World Affairs Council of Dallas-Fort Worth, we're discussing the United States policy on refugees. And we've got an audience here at the KERA studios, along with three guests. Don Huffines is a member of the Texas State Senate representing District 16. Jennifer Syme is Senior Vice President of United States Programs for the International Rescue Committee. And Ryan Crocker is former U.S. Ambassador to Afghanistan, Iraq, Pakistan, Syria, Kuwait, and Lebanon. Ahead of today's conversation, I sat down with Buck Revell. He's a former assistant deputy director of the FBI who's now a security consultant here in North Texas. I asked him about how we strike a balance between providing humanitarian aid and keeping Americans safe.
In this whole situation of terrorism, the people of the country from which the terrorism occurs generally are victims. And so if we simply shut off any sort of access to our country from people from, let's say, Afghanistan or Iraq or even Syria, then we are adding to the problems in that area. On the other hand, as we have seen in Europe, you have to vet those people and you have to be satisfied that the ones coming in are not going to pose a threat to you because you already have an internal threat. So you don't want to add to that by bringing in people who are committed to a particular ideology which poses a threat to your society.
Should the United States keep out people who are innocent to avoid the risk of taking in people who might wish us harm?
Well, I think you have to err on the side of until you are satisfied that the person doesn't pose a risk, that you don't allow that individual in. Now, obviously, women and children and elderly and so forth, you can make a lot of accommodations. But when you're talking about young males and even young females that are at the age that is particularly being recruited by the majority of terrorist groups today, then you have to be very careful about how they come in.
Should the FBI monitor these individuals once they've been allowed into the country if they have not been suspected of any criminal activity?
Well, not only should they not, they couldn't. There's 13,000 FBI agents. They have over 300 areas of jurisdiction. Terrorism and has about 1,200 agents. How many? And it takes, if you're going to run a surveillance, it takes about 25 agents a week to run a 24/7 surveillance. Well, you know, you could take maybe 10 of them. So you have to be very circumspect in who you put under surveillance. Obviously, those that are engaged in an active plot, and you try and get electronic coverage as well as physical coverage. But there is a limit to how many you can actually cover.
Buck, how would you characterize the actual security risk of allowing refugees from Syria in particular, but from other troubled parts of the world in general to settle here?
Well, I think the experience in Europe recently has said if you have 5,000 coming in, you may have three or four that will be jihadist, that will be either coming here to establish a ongoing organization and then produce potential jihadists, or that they would be supportive of the formation of those type groups.
Thank you so much for your time. I really
You're
appreciate
very welcome.
It.
Senator Don Huffines, is any level of risk acceptable?
No, I don't believe it is. And let's just talk for a minute about the vetting process. You know, I like that if you think about right now, Syria is in a complete state of war. It's run. So we're getting government records to vet these Syrians by. First, how do we trust the government of Syria? It's run by a dictator who's never been a friend of the United States. We've got rebel factions fighting all over the country. I would say we might not even be sure who these folks really are. What's their real name? You know, if ISIS or Al-Qaeda or Islamic radicals, they're at war with the United States, want to infiltrate our country. They've said that. They want to kill Americans. They want to come over here to kill Americans. Of course, they're going to come through the front door. And they already have. We saw that in San Bernardino, where the terrorist was vetted through the, not the refugee program, but the immigration program. We saw that with the Boston Marathon bombers. And we can't even secure the front door that they're being vetted through. We have a back door that doesn't even have a door on it. And that's our border security. We have no border security. We have hundreds of thousands of people crossing our border annually. We don't know who they are or what they're about. And that's with the federal government controlling the situation. I have no confidence in the federal government doing proper vetting. We don't, for instance, we don't even know who vetted the translators they're translating for these folks. So Yes, there is a huge security risk in this process.
Let me jump in to Ambassador Crocker's point earlier that it would be there are easier ways if you want to commit an act of terrorism in the United States and you live abroad. There are easier ways to get into the country, and maybe this speaks to some of your concerns about other kinds of security, than going, you know, through an 18 or 24 month vetting process as a refugee. What do you say to that?
Well, of course, there probably is. And they've got ability to make documents, forge documents. They're smart folks. But why wouldn't they try it? Well, they're very patient. They're very, very patient. So, of course, they're going to put people through the refugee program to resettle in the United States, some of their agents, some of their radical Islamists. Of course, they're going to come through the regular immigration process. They'll come any way they can. Why wouldn't they?
Jennifer Syme, can you tell us a little bit about what you know of the vetting process and why it takes a minimum of 18 months and often 2 years or more?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. So it really is a very, very rigorous process. First of all, when refugees leave their country of origin, they go to a neighboring country, and they're generally there for a while before their cases are actually referred for resettlement. So the United Nations agency will be in contact with these people either in a refugee camp setting or in an urban setting, and we'll sort of get to know them, collect some information, and then if the people are interested in resettling, they will decide if the cases actually meet the criteria of the country that might resettle them. So the UN is very careful about referring cases to the United States. Just because the UN refers a case, that doesn't mean that the U.S. admits it, right? So that's something that some people think that the UN is picking our refugees, and that is absolutely not true. The case then comes to the United States. There's a very long and elaborate process that involves pre-interviews, putting the file together, biometric information, meaning iris scans or fingerprints, checking names against numerous databases, doing a in-person interview face-to-face by Department of Homeland officials who have been specifically trained to conduct these interviews. Doing, in the case of Syrians, there is what they call an enhanced Syrian review. So people review the file here in Washington for cases that they would like to. And then the U.S. government at any point has the right to put that case on hold. If something doesn't, you know, feel right, if there's inconsistencies in the answers, you know, that case is put on hold. And they may revisit it later or they may just reject it outright. So that is always, you know, up to the U.S. government to do. So it really is a very, very strong system, and it is completely different from the situation in Europe. And I wouldn't want any of the listeners to think that these situations are comparable, because in Europe, people are coming in, they're registering, and then they're moving on, you know, and there isn't really a vetting system the way we have it here in the United States.
Ambassador Crocker, do you think it's appropriate to exclude this whole category of what are called unaccompanied men, meaning young men who don't come with a family or a wife but are just sort of coming as single individuals? Is that reasonable?
I don't think that any sweeping standard is a good idea. I think these cases need to be looked at on a case-by-case basis. I think we need to be much more cautious and careful about young single men or late teenagers. I am not comfortable saying wholesale exclusion. If you are between the ages of 18 and 39, you're not coming in, period. We need to look at each case. We need to look with greater care and scrutiny, I think, at young men. I am not in favor of blanket exclusions.
Senator Huffines, how do you feel about Syrian refugees specifically being resettled within the state of Texas?
Well, like I said, I like to bring up the story of, it's simple, but it really does, I think, bring this into context. If you have 100 jelly beans in a jar, and one of those jelly beans is going to kill you, it's poisonous, are you going to eat any jelly beans out of that jar? And you say, well, we're going to vet those jelly beans better. We're going to put 500 of them in there. Are you still going to eat any? No. This is a very serious issue. And when you're wrong, you can be really wrong. You're not talking about maybe a dozen people dying like in California from a woman, not a teenager, not a man, but a woman that started that. We're talking about possibly hundreds of people dying, if not 1,000 of people could die. And I don't think the risk is worth it.
How important is it that the communities where these individuals and families are being resettled welcome their presence?
So first, let me say something related to single males being resettled, because less than 2% of cases resettled in the United States are single males. So the vast majority are families that are coming here to be resettled. And actually, the vast majority are here to be resettled because they already have family in the United States. So those are, I think, two things that listeners need to know about. In terms of communities, we absolutely want to resettle refugees and welcoming communities. I think that's a key part of the integration process and of people being feeling welcomed and being able to thrive in their new country. I want to give you an example here in Texas. In fiscal year, actually in calendar year 2015, we had 17,000 hours worth of volunteer time that was devoted to our programs, which shows an incredible commitment on the part of the community. And I often hear that, you know, communities are against resettling Syrian refugees, but they have really come out in full force. And 17,000 hours is the equivalent of 708 days. That is really an amazing figure. And this is happening not just in Texas, but all over where we work. And we have offices in 26 cities. So we see tremendous support. We've also seen our donations go up, and people write us letters telling us, you know, please continue resettling refugees. You know, you're doing a great job. So we really feel that the communities are very supportive. We also try as much as possible to build relationships with other community partners, faith groups, churches, other nonprofits who can support these refugees in their integration phase.
We have an email here from Gail who says, it's my understanding that very few Christian Syrians are being admitted to the U.S. as opposed to many Syrian Muslim refugees coming. What do you know about this?
Probably be you, Jennifer.
Sure. So there have been some Christian Syrians that have come in. The majority, definitely, of the ones that have been resettled right now are Muslims. There's a number of reasons for that. A lot of the Christian Syrians are actually in Lebanon. Currently, there's no resettlement happening out of Lebanon. So most of the resettlement is out of Jordan and Turkey. You know, and the numbers are also, you know, a lot smaller. So even though, you know, you're not going to see them statistically as significant, because just the percentage of religious minorities is much smaller than the Muslim majority in that country.
Ambassador Crocker, what can you tell us about Lebanon and Turkey, which I think together have a combined, is it 3 million Syrians within their borders now?
Well, it's over 2 million in Turkey alone, a million in Lebanon, maybe slightly more, and close to a million in Jordan.
Yeah, about 660,000 in Jordan.
What's the effect on those places?
It's dramatic. Turkey, of course, a bigger country, able to absorb large numbers, but 2 million is an extraordinary number. The impact is much greater in Lebanon and in Jordan. Syrian refugees now constitute 20% of the Lebanese population. And it is a very fragile society. I spent six hard years in Lebanon during conflict. You know, that conflict could reignite. This massive refugee influx could be the match that that causes it to do so. King Abdullah of Jordan was recently in Washington. Would have been nice if the president had time to meet with him, since he's one of our strongest allies. He said, we can't take any more. We can't sustain this. Jordan, too, is a fragile society between East Bank Jordanians and West Bank Jordanians, Palestinians. The country was almost torn apart in 1970, a virtual civil war. So they are reeling under this burden, and it is up to us to step up to this, particularly in Lebanon and Jordan, to provide meaningful assistance that will take the burden off the host governments, give the refugees some hope and some sense of the future by staying where they are and not trying to flee to Europe or beyond. I hope very much that the conference going on today in London is going to produce very substantial international commitments. That will only happen if we lead and show the way. We are the largest donor now for support of refugees worldwide, but it just isn't enough.
Senator Huffines, when you hear about that strain, do you feel compelled that the United States has a moral and ethical obligation to do something about the strains on these other countries taking in refugees?
Yes, I do. And we are doing something about it. We should do more, but we should do it over there and not over here. So to provide them more support, financial support, food, and that nature, of course we should provide that. The war is a horrible situation. It's not even imaginable how horrible it is. But it doesn't mean we need to import it over here. And, you know, the refugee resettlement program was started in 1980. And the world was a different place at that time. Our country was different. We were fighting a Cold War. Now we're fighting a war against radical Islam. And maybe we should just sit back, step back, and look at the whole program and see, does it really fit where we are today in the United States?
Is money enough?
I just keep reusing one word, leadership. American leadership is in this issue and in so many others, the critical variable. And in this issue, as in so many others, I'm not seeing a lot of sustained American leadership.
We're speaking this hour with former U.S. Ambassador Ryan Crocker, State Senator Don Huffines, and Jennifer Syme of the International Rescue Committee. We will return to this conversation in just a couple of minutes. You can join it by emailing think@kera.org, or you can find me on Twitter @ChrisBoydThink.
Funding for Think comes from the SMU Graduate Liberal Studies Program. You can apply now to design your own doctoral or master's degree at SMU, specializing in organizational dynamics, human rights, and more. Details at smu.edu/GLS.
To Think on KERA, I'm Chris Boyd. We're talking about U.S. refugee policy before a live studio audience here at KERA today, thanks to our partners at the World Affairs Council of Dallas-Fort Worth. Three guests are with us. Jennifer Syme is Senior Vice President of United States Programs for the International Rescue Committee. Ryan Crocker is former U.S. Ambassador to Afghanistan, Iraq, Pakistan, Syria, Kuwait, and Lebanon. And Don Huffines is a member of the Texas State Senate representing District 16. As some countries in Europe are tightening their borders, Canada has been increasingly open to accepting refugees. The country has a goal of accepting as many as 25,000 from Syria and the Middle East. So I sat down recently with Consul General of Canada in Dallas, Sarah Wilshaw, to ask her about her country's approach to refugees.
This is something that is part of Canada's DNA, accepting people. We have a long and proud history, I think, of taking in people when they need it most. Not unlike the United States, I think the refugee resettlement program here is pretty robust. But we've taken in over 250,000 refugees post-World War II. There were large numbers out of Hungary, out of Kosovo, from Vietnam as well. All of them really successfully integrated into the Canadian fabric. And I think people have seen that, and they saw the humanitarian disaster and tragedy that's going on in Syria and wanted to respond.
Your Prime Minister Justin Trudeau won office in October in part by championing this program. Can you talk about why Canadians have been open to an idea that Americans at this moment in history in many cases are concerned about?
Well, I can't speak for the American public and what resonates here with them, particularly as you're going into an election year. That must be a challenge. But for Canada, I think the issue did come up in our election. It became a major question, and Canadians just voted overwhelmingly in support of it. It's part of the fabric of our country. We have a cultural mosaic. We have different communities who are encouraged to keep their identities as well as embrace what it means to be Canadian, and people are very comfortable with that in Canada.
Is there any concern that Canada is taking on too much global responsibility for this resettlement?
Oh, I don't think so. Look, there are 11 million displaced persons as a result of what's happening in Syria. What we're doing is our share, I think, and maybe a little more so, I don't know, but 25,000 doesn't seem like too many.
Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
You can follow this conversation on Twitter with the hashtag ThinkRefugees. We are speaking this hour with our guests about this. And I want to ask all of you, we should note here that the population of Canada is about 35 million. They're taking in 25,000 people. The population of the United States is 319 million. So far, we've resettled fewer than 3,000, according to a New York Times story a couple weeks ago. There's a promise of 10,000 by this fall. Is there a strategic way to determine the right number for resettlement, whether that's higher or lower than what we've done so far?
Well, I would say that you have to look at the type of crisis that you're dealing with. You know, and I think that in the case of Syria, you're looking at one of the worst crises that the world has seen, you know, at least in the last 30 years. And our response as a country should be in proportion to that. So we should be taking more than 10,000 Syrians. We are, as you said, a nation of 319 million. We certainly have the capacity to absorb those numbers and more. We have the precedent. I mean, back in 1980, we resettled more than 100,000 Vietnamese per year. And we have the resources and the community support to do it. So I think, as Ambassador Crocker said earlier, it's a matter of leadership.
Senator Huffines, what would have to change for you? I'm assuming that you think the right number is fewer than 10,000, perhaps fewer than 3,000. What would have to change for you to tick that number up, if anything could change for you?
I think it'd be very difficult to give me assurance that we don't have a security risk. Let me just quote for a second here. I'm going to read from the Obama administration's James Comey's FBI director. And he specifically says, I can't sit here and offer anybody an absolute assurance that there's no risk associated with this refugee problem. And that's indicative, I think, when you've got the Obama administration saying that they can't assure us a safety risk. So this is about safety. It's about security of the United States. It's about security of Dallas. It's about security of Texas. Dallas resettled approximately 2,000 refugees last year. The state of Texas did approximately 8,000 last year. So we do
Excuse
our...
Excuse me, were there problems with those resettlements?
Not yet. But just because we haven't had a problem doesn't mean we don't need to be prepared for the future. So we do our share of resettling, and we really do. And there's some issues related to the program on transparency. I think that's why you've seen the Attorney General file a lawsuit against the federal government to that effect. And when the law was passed in 1980, they're supposed to notify the state of Texas and consult the state of Texas on the process. And there's just been a lack of transparency in this process, and transparency is good government.
Ambassador Crocker, I want to talk about whether it's reasonable to ask Americans to accept risk in order to take in people in need. You know, what Senator Huffines said, I think, and no one would disagree, that it's impossible to guarantee that nothing will go wrong with taking in refugees.
There are no 100% guarantees in life, certainly not in the world that I spent so many years in. So it becomes a question of weighing different concerns and different equities. I come down on the side of significantly increased numbers of Syrian refugees. And I do so for several reasons that I've tried to state. One of them is who we are as a country, a nation of immigrants and refugees that has grown increasingly stronger through successive waves of people from different parts of the world. If it's in Canada's DNA, it's in ours too. The other argument, though, that I make is a security argument. I think that by excluding a whole class of refugees, based on their ethnicity or their religion, we are playing into the hands of those who want to do us serious harm. We are helping them perpetuate the myth that the entire country is anti-Arab and anti-Muslim. That is a way to get your enemy list substantially increased, and I think it's very, very dangerous. It also sends a message to some of our own citizens that I don't think we want to send, that somehow they're second-class citizens because they're of the same nationality, ethnicity, or religion of the people that we're now seeking to exclude. You put some numbers out there, relative numbers. Here's one that I found particularly sad. We've admitted since the conflict started some 2,600 Syrian refugees. In 2015, substantially more refugees than 2,600, over 3,300, died trying to cross the Mediterranean to safety.
Is it reasonable under any circumstances to consider the religious faith or practice of refugees looking to come into the United States? Jennifer, I see you shaking your head.
Yeah, absolutely not. I think, you know, again, as I said at the beginning, all refugees go through terrible experiences. That's why they become refugees. They didn't choose to become a refugee. It just has happened. And I think that if we are going to have a true refugee resettlement program in this country, we have to accept refugees regardless of their country of origin, their religion, their ethnicity. You know, we cannot start making distinctions about good refugees versus bad refugees. I mean, it just doesn't work that way.
Senator Huffhans?
Yeah, I concur. Religion should not be part of the criteria to be resettled.
Just so we can have 3 for 3 in agreement on something. do you agree?
We all actually agree.
We haven't talked very much about what refugees can do for the societies that they are integrated into. We talk a lot about what we might do for them, what, you know, might happen for them and the other places they go. What do we know about the costs and contributions of inviting refugee populations into communities? They don't, you know, historically, they don't all instantly become quite successful, but over time, what can we say in general?
Yeah, I think over time, refugees are able to contribute a lot to the communities where they are resettled. So just to give you a couple of examples, here in Dallas, the IRC has run a program where refugees save money between $2,000 and $4,000, and then we match that amount, and then they use that to either buy a vehicle or buy a home or set up a business, pursue higher education. And in 3 years that we had that program, from 2013 through 2015, we had more than $5 million worth of investments. There were 88 vehicles purchased and 31 homes that were purchased. I mean, that is incredible success. Another thing that I'd like to highlight is that people, you know, the resettlement program is built on the concept of self-sufficiency. So as soon as refugees arrive to the United States, even before their first month is up, we enroll them in an employment program. We have amazing employment rates here in Texas of about 90% for the refugees that we resettle here. They're making, on average, $10 an hour, even though the minimum wage is $7.25. So there's great success, you know, and of course, once they start working, they start contributing to the tax base because they're paying taxes. So I think that overall, you know, refugees should be seen as an investment in the future.
We have an email here that says, why can't all the countries who are aiding and accepting refugees get together and build a stronghold in Syria to help people there, help them build a safe environment and self-sustaining community? Could we do more on the ground in Syria?
Absolutely. I have been a totally unsuccessful advocate for many, many months now of U.S.-enforced no-fly zone in northern and southern Syria. That would combine with an effort on the ground to create safe zones, north and south. Again, Syrians, by and large, don't want to leave Syria. They're leaving not just because, as the Refugee Convention says, they have a well-founded fear of persecution. They have a well-founded fear of violent death. If there could be areas in Syria where they would feel safe, we could expect to find them there. Even though my military friends tell me that a no-fly zone is quite a feasible option, the administration has shown absolutely no willingness to entertain it.
Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yes. We've got to be careful we're not doing a disservice to the Syrians themselves by resettling them. The people in Syria with means have left. The educated class, those with money, they've already have left the country. And so as we take more people and more refugees are resettled, the country is going to be left with nothing but combatants. It's going to be left with people who obviously aren't going to get along. I think we should definitely do more on the ground in that area to help the folks. But we've got to be careful that we don't create another Palestine, a state within a state, where we're having to build walls around folks that nobody wants. So it's a very difficult situation, but it should be very well thought out, too, before we just go in there and do something.
I have about 30 seconds left for each of you, and I'm curious as to how you expect this situation to play out in the United States over the rest of this year. Jennifer Syme, we'll start with you.
I think that, you know, being that we're in an election year, it's obviously, a difficult situation. We've heard a lot of rhetoric around this, and in most instances, that rhetoric has not been very positive. But I do think that there is a lot of support throughout the country, and communities do want to see Syrians. We get calls every day of people saying, I have an extra bedroom. Can I have a Syrian in my home? So I think that we will continue to work towards increasing the number of Syrian refugees coming to this country and ensuring that their resettlement here is as successful as possible.
Senator Heffines, I have about 20 seconds for you.
I think this is a big security risk for the United States. I don't think we should be taking any more Syrian refugees or any refugees from radical Islamic countries. We need to secure the borders, the front door and the back door.
Ambassador Crocker.
I can't give you a timeline, but I am confident that the United States will do what it has always done in the long run, that it will extend shelter to those who are fleeing death and persecution, that we will live up to, as we always have, that which is engraved on the Statue of Liberty. Give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free. That's who we are, and that's what we'll do.
Ryan Crocker is former U.S. ambassador to Afghanistan, Iraq, Pakistan, Syria, Kuwait, and Lebanon, now dean of the George Bush School of Government and Public Service at Texas A&M. Don Huffines is a member of the Texas State Senate representing District 16. Jennifer Syme is senior vice president of United States Programs for the International Rescue Committee. It's been a pleasure to speak with all of you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chris.
Think is produced by Stephen Becker and engineered by Shelley Canavy. Jeff Whittington is executive producer. I'm on Twitter at Chris Boyd Think. The show's email address is think@kera.org. Once again, I'm Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening and have a great day.